It is October 28th, 2022. We're green here. It is 16:03 hours. And we're about to begin, little children, our study of Psalm. What are we on now? 8? 18? What is it? 8, I think. Yeah, 8. Right, we're on 8. We did Psalm 7. David was pleading with Jehovah to save him from his enemies, from his persecutors, which implies that David could see that he had enemies. He was aware of his enemies. He wasn't afraid to identify or to mention their existence to Jehovah in his prayer. And I thought of that the other day. It's curious because what if we appear to be enemies to someone else? That was the thing that occurred to me, which does in fact happen, because why else would people persecute the righteous if they didn't see them as enemies? They must see them as enemies, and that's why they persecute them. It's fairly logical, it's fairly simple to understand. Anyway, how do we, you know, think of that when we're thinking of David praying to Jehovah about his enemies? How would he know, or how would we know that we're not the enemy of someone else, or how would David know that he's not their enemy? Well, he wasn't chasing them, for example, trying to kill them. That was one way he knew he wasn't trying to be their enemy. But they were chasing him. Saul was chasing him, trying to kill him, for example. Oh, I love the smell in here. I've got the foot powder. That's the most beautiful smell, with the rose geranium oil and all the smells of the aloe vera, I guess. The aloe vera doesn't smell particularly nice, but the other tea tree oil and peppermint. I mean, peppermint's lovely, but rose geranium oil is amazing. I mean, it's just phenomenal. It's exquisite, I think I would say, describe it as. Okay, let's look at this in the Watchtower, June 2008. The article, Why God Favored Noah, Why We Should Care. Several paragraphs, quite a few paragraphs down. It mentions there that to the people of the pre-flood world, Noah was odd. O-double-D, odd. So strange. He stood out to them because he was unusual. He appeared unusual, but in a way that they didn't understand. That was the thing. They did not understand. That's what someone who's odd that's the way someone appears to someone else if they appear odd. There's something that you don't understand about that person. Why is that person looking or acting that way, or why do they dress that way, or why do they talk that way? They appear odd because they're different. So that's interesting. Okay, that was 2008 June in that article. So now we're coming to because we had a talk. There was a video, one of the videos. There are more videos on the JW.org site. So we can look this article up on the JW.org website under Library Magazines, The Watchtower, June 2008. Why God Favored Noah, Why We Should Care. But we can also look at the library and video section. If we do that, we've got some new videos. We've got a governing body update, number 7, and we have also Brother Sanderson, Brother Curzan, and it's in Brother Sanderson's talk that he mentions Noah. And we have comfort for those who mourn. We have some other talks that these videos that were released a day or so or more, a day or more ago, a little while ago, which were the return visit from Revelation 21, verse 3 and 4, and also Brother Hurd. Very instructive talk and a very, there was a word that I had that was a very descriptive, good word for describing Brother Ekron's talk. I thought, he raised a very good question, but there's a word for that. He raises a very good question in that talk, but it's an implied question, it's a very good implied question there. But I don't think the answer is, or the question should be focused on too closely. At least not in the case where it's raising any doubts about things, but it should. I thought it was a very. It was good, from my viewpoint, as a chronologer, because I study chronology, and I had not gotten any insight up until recently. Not at all. Up until no insight. Up until that talk, about this visit of Paul's to Jerusalem. But that's all I should say about that right now, because it can lead to the wrong question. When you're studying chronology, there can be coincidences that happen in the chronology that you can't prove something by showing a correspondence in chronology. Or in science, I should say. In science and in statistics, something can be the 14th year. It can be the 14th year in many different ways. And there are many ways of understanding that. And you can't, definitively argue based on speculation. That's the problem. So you have to use logic to rule out all the other possibilities. Often you can't rule out all the other possibilities, but you try to rule out. You try to distill it down to the most basic understanding of the math of how many years elapse between here and there. And if the answer, we're not saying, Paul visited Jerusalem on 2 different occasions. So, how are you going to argue which one was which? That's the problem. So, you don't need to argue that. We need to wait for further insight, because we don't know from when the 14 years were counted. We don't know after 14 years whether it was counted from this point or some later point. We don't know, so we can't. There's no point in arguing that. But we do know the earliest point from which it could have been counted. That's the argument. That was the argument that was used in the article I wrote, even though I wasn't aware necessarily of all the details of my own argument. That has manifested itself through this video that Brother Ekron has, in which he raised this question, this video of his. Anyway, there's another video about the tent, the initial call. We have a song about faithful sisters. We are thankful for your practice of giving. Was it designed? November, JW Broadcasting, Purple Triangles. There's another song too, but it's not here anymore. But we have a lot of, it'll be somewhere on the website. Maybe under the songs in these video categories. You know, you can search for it. Programs and events, family. It's probably not under JW Broadcasting, but it's under something else. Could be under activities if we click on that. But you can investigate this. That's something. Audio and video production, construction, relief work, special events, so on. So let's continue. I mean, I don't know where that song is now. I'm fairly sure it's on the website somewhere. That's the thing. And it's a video. So it's probably under the video category of one or the other. Would it be an activity or an organization? A drama? Well, we just looked there. Yeah, we just looked there. Right. There's my mouse. My mouse seems to be doing unusual things here. I often get double clicks with my mouse. Family, which is just, it's either the mouse or it's the OS. I'm not sure which. Anyway, from time to time, you can investigate what these different categories have in them. Programs and events. Well, we could search for that song too if we knew the name of it. I think I don't. It's called Jehovah, My Mom and Me. Or no, it's called My Mom. Jehovah, My Mom and Me, I think it's called. Yeah. But we could Google that. So I could go Google jw.org. Right? In the Google or in your search engine or in your address bar, you say jw.org, but you can also say site, prepend this, site colon jw.org, and then that's it. That'll search the site jw.org. Jehovah, My Mom and Me, and you say, does it come up? There it is. Activities. Watch the video, Jehovah, My Mom and Me, it says. Music songs. So it's under library music songs. Right there is another place where it is. There it is. So there's the song, Jehovah, My Mom and Me. Right. Yeah. So let's hear it. Let's hear it right now. It's a video. We can watch it. We don't have to just hear it. We can watch it. Is it playing? I'm trying to click on it. I clicked on it. Something. I don't know what happened. Something went wrong. Oh, I know what it is. You know what it is? I've got to minimize that. There we go. I must have clicked on the wrong thing. No? I'm clicking on a picture. There's the video. Good. We've got it now.
Thank you.
Well, that was a very powerful message in that song. And I've been meaning or thinking about updating my website too, but it's just there are a lot of things that need to be updated on the website all at once. If I attempt to do that, it would be it's a fair amount of work, but I'm making my updates through my videos. And it's interesting, that song, it may be by a very young person. It sounds like it might be a very young person. That's what it sounds like. But I'd like to give some constructive criticism about that recording. The song is the kind of song that doesn't have, it has a lot of meaning in the lyrics, but it doesn't have a lot of melodic. It has some powerful melodic content, but it doesn't have a lot of melodic content. So for that, it almost wants to be sung in an effortless way where the voice is it's hard to say. There has to be meaning in the voice, but you don't want the voice to be, for one thing, the range of the singer, you don't want to stretch the range of the singer to where the singer can't reach the high notes. That's what I mean, I think, where the effort in the singing does not stretch, you know, beyond the limit of what the singer can reach as to the high notes. That's one thing that I think is important. That I noticed that in this song there might be a bit of a stretch going on in the limit of the range of the singer. That's something. I'm not sure what else it is. There's something else that the voice appears to be strained in some way, even though maybe it's because the person's very young. I'm not sure what the reason is. And that's the only thing that is not appealing to me about the song. I think the song is quite appealing, except for the fact that it seems to be some kind of a strain on the singer. I like the song, but anyway, that's my opinion about that. But it's very, I mean, it's an inspiring song, you know. It inspires. That's the thing. Brother Curzan gave a talk about showing appreciation for all of Jehovah's provisions, talking about attending meetings. I've spoken about that before. And there's another thing, but, you know, I mean, like he was saying, some people have gone to these meetings every day or every meeting, or all their lives, you know, every several times a week, all their lives. And more than that, because there are service meetings where they go out in the service as well. But that's not all. If you go to the meetings, there's going to be implicit pressure to become a Bethelite and, you know, work at the country's headquarters or the world headquarters or somewhere where you are even more involved, you know, where you get even more involved in the preaching work. So it's not just the meetings. It doesn't stop at the meetings. That's the thing to realize. It doesn't stop there. There's always more commitment, more commitment, more commitment that can be offered by you if you are willing to do that. So it's not just this is what you need to do. That's not what it is. None of it is an obligation, because did Jesus ever mention meetings, that you have to go to meetings? No, or that meetings were, I mean, he didn't mention that. It wasn't, they would get together. He and his disciples would get together all the time. They were associating with each other all the time. So there was that going on. It wasn't he said, where there are two or three gathered together in my name, there I am in their midst. So meetings are good. It's just that they're not certainly required. And Jesus, about his, he did stand up in the synagogue and read, right? We know, it, if we look at Jesus' example, did Jesus go, did he go to meetings three times a week? And, you know, I mean, what did Jesus do? How did Jesus live? And we can't really translate that to the modern day, because we know there are lots of things nowadays that are different from how they were when Jesus lived. We don't attempt to translate everything over and live exactly like Jesus did. That's not what we try to do. But we, if we follow Jesus' example, we won't have to worry about what some other people say or what they write about in their own, in some articles, you know, that are not, if it's not in the Bible, it's different. You know, it's not the same. It's not some source that we have to, you know, obey. We don't have to obey something if it's not in the Bible. That's the thing. So appreciating all of Jehovah's provisions, yes, but if they're Jehovah's provisions, yes, but Jehovah provided the Bible. Do we appreciate the Bible? That's the question. Do we appreciate the Bible with the teachings of Jesus? That's the question, because to go beyond that is not, it's not really approved to go beyond the Bible. It's not approved at all to go beyond the Bible. That's the other thing. Well, we've seen that before. You know, if you add anything, whoever adds anything to any of these words, what book was that in? I mean, we can look it up. We know that it's wrong to add anything to the words of the Bible. So, yeah, no, I mean, we don't need to criticize, but I mean, the problem with going to meetings is you become, it's less responsible. You become less responsible. You're giving up responsibility to someone else to do the work for you. You're associating with other people. You can share. I guess it's like YouTube, too, where all the people are sharing with each other on YouTube, becoming a community on YouTube. But then each of them becomes less responsible. They become less responsible. They're becoming, it's a group mentality. Instead of their own talent gets swept aside, their own ability. They don't get to develop it the same way because they're being, you know, told that they don't have to do that, or it's implied they don't have to achieve excellence in their own work as an individual because they've got this group mentality. It's a group thing. It's not always a good thing to be in a group. It's not always a good thing. Okay, so that's the idea. It's not good if it diminishes your effort that you put into trying to develop your own strengths, you know, your own. It doesn't, I mean, I was taught lots of things when I was a young person, growing up, going through high school, and so I was taught by my parents a lot of things about, and one of the things they did teach me was about groups and about being an individual, distinct from the crowd, let's say, you know, that sort of thing. The other talk, the update was important because it talked about what do we do if there's a war, and how do we decide, you know, when we're going to abandon our country, you know, when are we going to leave the country because we've got a war and there might be bombs dropping, when are we going to leave and go somewhere else? So there's very good information there mentioned about you should have a bag ready, you know, like with an overnight bag with some clothes or whatever, very small amount of clothing and things that you might need kept in the bag, a go bag, ready to go in case you have to leave. And your car should be full of gasoline at all times in case you have to leave. So those are the things that they talk about that are very significant in that video. And there's, I mean, that's the update of the governing body. It's number 7 for the year. I'm drawing a blank. It's Stephen Lett. That's who it is. Yeah, I was drawing a blank on the brother's name. I don't know why. It's Brother Stephen Lett, and there's Mark Sanderson and Ronald Curzan, Samuel Hurd. I know these brothers. We don't always mention their first names. John Ekron. And we had... I know the brother, too, who is... his name is also escaping me in the JW Broadcasting October. Brother Lett did September JW Broadcasting. If I do update my website, I'm thinking of putting September, October, November all together, so keeping 3 months present all at once. But if I do that in multiple languages, that will be a lot of work. So I might... It's all the work that the time that's... The effort and the work prevents me from doing other work on that day. If I have to do that work, if I'm publishing it online, that's a lot of energy because it's going out online where it can be accessed by millions or trillions, or not trillions because we don't have that many, but billions of people could access it online. That takes energy to make something available to billions of people. It takes energy. If they were actually all accessing it, it would take even more energy. But it takes a lot of energy to actually put it out there. And I know this brother's name. Let's see. He doesn't... the name is given right at the beginning of the talk. But I can mute this, maybe. And just see what... To get the name. I know the brother's name because I've seen it before. He's given many talks in the conventions, you know, and things like that. But I can't fast forward this like I can on YouTube. You can't fast forward the videos. You have to... You can jump ahead with mouse clicks, but you might miss something. I might miss something if I try and do that. So he's giving an introduction on what's in the... What's in the video? That was October. November is going to be coming, it seems, possibly quite soon. So there it is, October. Now his name is going to come up, I think, but I can't fast forward, or I would skip forward, and we'd get the name quicker. If I don't know the name, I can't look it up. I can't search it up. I can't search on Google for his name if I don't know his name. But I do know his name. It's just Robert Cerenko, right. I know his name. I know all these brothers' names. But I know there's Kenneth Flodin. There's Mark Newmare. I know all the brothers' names. It's just I don't know them all the time. They're not going to come to mind on every occasion. When I want them to. In other words, Robert Cerenko, right. He is, in fact, I believe, the president of the Watchtower Society. That's why I know him, Robert Cerenko. So, anyway, it's time to do our study, little children, if you're ready. Let's see, what time is it? What time are we? Oh, good. We've only used 30 minutes. We have lots of time. I thought we'd taken a lot. I thought I was talking a lot longer. But I was outside today. Before we do our study, I just remembered. My pants came yesterday, but I don't know when they came because they were so quiet. Along with the boots, the Patagonia fleece pants came, and they're very heavy fleece. You can probably see how... you can see that they're very heavy. They have a decorative pocket, but I'm looking at the wrong video. That's why I'm sometimes... not showing things to the camera because I'm looking at my own monitor, which is a different video size. These fleece pants are very heavy fleece, very thick. It's very, very good. So it does feel like it is. These are heavier than the ones I'm wearing. So this tells me this is nice and warm. And it probably is just like I was calculating when I showed the way to how to calculate how heavy the fleece is. These are probably 300 grams per square meter. I was calculating that. I thought there would be more than 300, and they seem like they are the heaviest fleece I've ever seen for fleece pants. So that's, they're not too heavy, you know, but they're, see there, there's the, these are the two legs of the pants folded over on themselves. So doubled over. So each pant leg is doubled there. You can see both sides of each pant leg. Together it makes a thickness of about, what is that? How thick is that? There's no light. There's no light in here, but that's the way I want it. So what do we got? Let's see. It's dim. Well, that's like an inch or more. Yeah, it's more than an inch when you put the two sides together. It's significant thickness of fleece. It's, if you don't squeeze it, it takes up about an inch for four layers, more than an inch for four layers. So it's about a quarter inch thick fleece, almost, you know, nearly close to that. So Psalm 8 is very nice and short. I'm tired because I was out raking leaves today. I raked up and spread leaves on my garden as a mulch, and I did, as I did that also last year. That was perhaps the first year that I've done that, was last year. And so I was wheeling the wheelbarrow across my yard multiple times to do that, and I got enough exercise, so I thought I'd come in. And the weather is supposed to be unbelievably good, but I can't really believe it. But the rain that they said we were going to get is now not supposed, it's only 25% estimate probability. And if it doesn't rain, the first day when we have more than 25% will be November 5th. Every other day is less than 25 or equal to 25% probability. And every day except for two of them are under 25%, by more like zero. Close to zero or 7%. And then, I mean, the weather, it's unbelievable. If we really get that weather, there's one day below zero. Tonight. Tonight looks like it's below zero. It's either tonight or it's tomorrow, or it was last night. But I didn't see any frost, so I guess it's tonight. When they say today, and then they give overnight, and they say minus below zero, they're talking about tomorrow, technically, if we consider the overnight of tonight as part of today. You know, if we, now in the Jewish system, the night was the day, the night, the evening or the night was the next day, it was part of the next day, it wasn't. But in our system, we seem to view that the other way, where tonight is part of today, and then so tomorrow morning is considered part of today as well. If it gets cold at night, it's considered part of, our day begins at dawn, essentially. But we still have midnight. Technically, the calendar day begins at midnight. So we have a bit of a contradiction in our calendar, which always confuses, I'm sure, some people, and not just me, but it confuses me as to whether they're referring to tonight, it's going to be tomorrow morning when it's cold, or is it going to be last night that they're talking about? Was it already occurring? And I think it's the former. I think it's tomorrow they're talking about, actually. To the director upon the Gittith, a melody of David, Psalm 8. Jehovah, help us to be humble and to be faithful, to be looking for things we can learn about you and about the universe, the laws of nature, natural phenomena around us, that we can learn these things, but in a spiritual way, that we can be guided by the Spirit that you give, so that we can, even without knowing any of these things, we can achieve miraculous results through the power that you have over the universe, and not our own power. And we ask these things in Jesus' name. I don't know why I prayed that particular prayer, but every time I pray something, then we read the psalm, and I realize subconsciously, or we read something else in the scripture that for the day's study, and it turns out in so many cases that there's something relevant that my subconscious knew, because I don't preview in most cases any of this. Sometimes I do, but generally I don't at all preview it. But my subconscious knows everything in the Bible and everything that I've read, not just in the Bible. My subconscious knows everything online that I've read. My subconscious knows everything that I've seen anywhere that I've seen it, and remembers it all. I can't speak for other people, but I know that my subconscious does do that. So to the director upon the Gittis, little children, a melody of David, O Jehovah our Lord, how majestic your name is in all the earth. You whose dignity is recounted above the heavens. Out of the mouth of children and sucklings, you have founded strength on account of those showing hostility to you, so as to make the enemy and the one taking his vengeance desist. When I see your heavens, the works of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have prepared, what is mortal man that you keep him in mind, and the son of earthling man that you take care of him? You also proceeded to make him a little less than godlike ones, and with glory and splendor you then crowned him. You make him dominate over the works of your hands. Everything you have put under his feet, small cattle and oxen, all of them, and also the beasts of the open field, the birds of heaven and the fish of the sea, anything passing through the paths of the seas. O Jehovah our Lord, how majestic your name is in all the earth. That's Psalm chapter 8. It's just a revelry. It's a revelation. It's a statement of admiration of the psalmist David. It's his expression of awe, right? About how awestruck he is about Jehovah's creation and the things that Jehovah does with his creation, like the idea that even children and sucklings, through the sayings of their own mouths at that young age, can provide people with strength and found it, like they can establish strength, these young children, or Jehovah can, with the use of the mouth of the young children, the mouths of young children. He can establish strength for the first time in somebody, or in some organization, or in the whole world. He can establish strength from the mouths, or the mouth of a child, the mouths of children, or the mouth of a child. He can do that, and he does it because of those who show hostility to him. You see that? He gives the reason why he does it. And he does it also, the reason why he does it, to on account of those showing hostility to his servants, is to make the enemy desist. Right? He makes the enemy stop doing what the enemy's doing. It's wonderful. it seems like it's so poorly known. It's so little known. It's so seldom mentioned, this aspect of Jehovah, that he uses young and innocent babes, you know, children, you know, very young children to do things that are powerful to stop the enemies from taking action against Jehovah's people. But then David goes on to mention the heavens and the things in the heavens that are so incredible, the moon and the stars, but there's planets too, we know, but the moon and the stars. And sometimes the planets just look like stars too. They're just shining objects in the skies, in the heavens. At night we see them. What is mortal man that you keep in mind? That you keep him in mind? What is mortal man that you keep him in mind? Why would Jehovah care about? I mean, what David is saying, it seems like, is when we look at the heavens, why does Jehovah care or pay any attention at all to people on earth who are just tiny compared to the enormous heavens with the huge, you know, heavenly bodies that are up there? They're just gigantic heavenly bodies. They're far away, they shine brightly, but they're huge. The distances are enormous. And we get that sense when we look at the heavens. So David was saying, you know, we're so small. Who is mortal man that you care about him? Like, why would you care about us on earth? Why? Verse 4, right? Because we looked at the heavens. We understand something that is much bigger than us. Why do you care about us? But you also made man just only slightly less than angels. Like, we're just slightly below the angels because we're in God's image. We're created in God's image. We have this love that we're capable of giving. We have, you know, we're like God in being capable of giving love. And we've been crowned with glory and splendor. I mean, it just goes on. We've been allowed to dominate the whole, not the universe, but maybe, but the whole world, the earth, all these things that are on earth, the life forms. If there were life on the other planets that we knew of, we might be saying yes, maybe there'd be humanoid forms, but so we don't know if we would dominate over the whole universe, but we would dominate this planet. Is Jehovah's given us this planet to dominate. He's given us the intellect or the ability to learn how to dominate wisely over these other parts of these other creatures, these other parts of creation, these other living things. All of them are under our dominion. There's birds of heaven. We're intended to dominate them too, but it's a little harder to dominate them. If we're not even, they're above us, they're flying over our heads. Might be a little more difficult for us to get access to the birds flying overhead, but they're part of our dominion too. So that's even more, Jehovah gives us the ability to dominate over the birds as well, in terms of we have the mental powers to do it. So he's given us this incredible power. That's why it would appear David is so awestruck by all of this. It includes all of these things, including our dominion over the creatures, some of whom are more divine in some ways, perhaps, than we are, because they can fly. But they're not more divine than we are in their ability to show love. O Jehovah, our Lord, how majestic your name is in all the earth. He's mentioning the earth because that's what he's been talking about. But yeah, David doesn't get into all of the intellectual powers that humans have. He doesn't talk about that here, but the idea is there because he says you make man dominate over the works of your hands. Everything you've put under his feet, including the birds. It's David's song in expression of his feeling of deep reverence for the things that Jehovah has done and is doing, the things he's doing now, the things he was doing in David's time, in other words. What is this, the 28th, and so we're on the 8th of Isaiah. Jehovah proceeded to say to me, is this short or long? Most of the Isaiah chapters I researched after I spoke about it. There aren't any really long chapters in Isaiah, so I was not quite correct, or I thought, I didn't mention any numbers, but there aren't really as many, there aren't very many. There are very few chapters that are longer than, say, 20, I think, verses, but there are some that are closer to 30 verses. But Isaiah generally has shorter chapters than I really was thinking. I was thinking Isaiah had some longer chapters, but I don't think that that's correct now, having reviewed it myself. There's a place called blueletterbible.org, I think it's called. If you look up Blue Letter Bible, there's one of their pages. If you Google that, Blue Letter Bible, the chapters and verses of the Bible. No, it's not. Maybe it's not Blue Letter Bible. Maybe it wasn't Blue Letter Bible. But if I look at Bible, it's not Blue Letter, I think. Chapters and verses of the Bible. If you Google that, when I Google that, what do I get? There's a website. That's not it. Okay. Well, it's in my history, but it's somewhere. See, why is the Bible divided into chapters and verses? Now, I know that's here. Okay. The Bible, I think I need to put the word Bible. Bible. Yeah, how many verses in each chapter? That's the search. The average is 26 per chapter, but that's not what I was looking for. The Bible, this is it here. The Bible.life, I think that's the one. Yeah, the Bible.life, that website, the Bible.life. If you go there, you can click on New Testament is there. Now you can click on Old Testament up above and it'll give you the Old Testament. And then you can search for the prophet Isaiah, which is somewhere here under the major prophets. There he is. If you search for him, you can scroll over and see every chapter of Isaiah. It says chapter 1 of Isaiah has 31 chapters. There are 66 chapters, but I mean most of them are less than 30 verses per chapter. And you can find that out. Actually, yeah, quite a lot less than 30 verses per chapter for the book of Isaiah. But I'm frequently wrong in what I say, but I almost invariably look up what I said to verify and to correct it afterwards. So that's how I learn, is I'm unafraid to make statements about what I believe is true. In many cases, but I try not to make statements that are frivolous. I'm speaking out of my memory when I was speaking from memory when I said that Isaiah had some longer chapters, but they're not longer than about 30 verses, so that's not really very long, not compared to some of the Gospels chapters that are much longer than that, 50 or more verses in some of the gospel chapters, which is going to be a lot harder to read in terms of taking more time and energy to read them. So we might break some of them up into two, perhaps, or maybe we will just take more time for the readings of those. So right now, we're about to begin Isaiah chapter 8. John chapter 8 might be very long. And we're getting toward the end of our study, so we better stick to the reading if we're going to get through here. Isaiah chapter 8, and Jehovah proceeded to say to me, take for yourself a large tablet and write upon it with the stylus of mortal man. Meher Shalal Hashbaz. And let me have attestation for myself by faithful witnesses. Uriah the priest and Zechariah the son of Jeberechiah. Then I went near to the prophetess, and she came to be pregnant and in time gave birth to a son. Jehovah now said to me, call his name Meher Shalal Hashbaz, for before the boy will know how to call out my father and my mother, one will carry away the resources of Damascus and the spoil of Samaria before the king of Assyria. That's talking about the prophecy of the sacking and the fall of Samaria. And Jehovah proceeded to speak yet further to me, saying, for the reason that this people has rejected the waters of the Shiloah that are going gently, and there is exaltation over Rezin and the son of Remaliah, even therefore, look, Jehovah is bringing up against them the mighty and the many waters of the river. That refers to the Euphrates River. The king of Assyria and all his glory. And he will certainly come up over all his stream beds and go over all his banks and move on through Judah. He will actually flood and pass over. Up to the neck he will reach. And the outspreading of his wings must occur to fill the breadth of your land, O Emmanuel. Be injurious, O you peoples, and be shattered to pieces. And give ear, all you in distant parts of the earth. Gird yourselves and be shattered to pieces. Gird yourselves and be shattered to pieces. Plan out a scheme, and it will be broken up. Speak any word, and it will not stand, for God is with us. For this is what Jehovah has said to me with strongness of the hand, that he may make me turn aside from walking in the way of this people, saying, you men must not say a conspiracy, respecting all that of which this people keep saying, a conspiracy. And the object of their fear, you men must not fear, nor must you tremble at it. Jehovah of armies, he is the one whom you should treat as holy. And he should be the object of your fear. And he should be the one causing you to tremble. And he must become as a sacred place. But as a stone to strike against, and as a rock over which to stumble, to both the houses of Israel. As a trap and as a snare, to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And many among them will be certain to stumble and to fall and be broken and to be snared and caught. Wrap up the attestation, put a seal about the law among my disciples, and I will keep in expectation of Jehovah, who is concealing his face from the house of Jacob, and I will hope in him. Look, I and the children whom Jehovah has given me are as signs and as miracles in Israel from Jehovah of armies, who is residing in Mount Zion. And in case they should say to you people, apply to the spiritistic mediums. or to those having a spirit of prediction who are chirping and making utterances in low tones, is it not to its God that any people should apply? Should there be an application to dead persons in behalf of living persons? To the law and to the attestation. Surely they will keep saying what is according to this statement that will have no light of dawn. And each one will certainly pass through the land hard pressed and hungry, and it must occur that because he is hungry and has made himself feel indignant, he will actually call down evil upon his king and upon his God, and he will certainly peer upward, and to the earth he will look, and lo, distress and darkness, obscurity, hard times, and gloominess with no brightness. That's the end of Isaiah 8. That's interesting. He will peer upward. Because we just read David looking at the stars in Psalm 8, and now Isaiah is talking about somebody who would call down evil upon his king and upon his God and would certainly peer upward. But David did not call down evil upon God, certainly. He did pray for deliverance from his enemies. David may have been hungry at times when he was fleeing from his enemies. Certainly, that's something we might assert as having a basis in truth. There was, look at they will that will have no light of dawn. It's interesting that they will keep saying what is according to this statement that will have no light of dawn. So there are people who are giving false testimony, is what that's saying. There are people who give statements that are not ever going to come true, because that's what it means. No light of dawn means it's not going to come true. And Isaiah is saying, I will keep listening to Jehovah. I will keep in expectation in verse 17 of Jehovah. Even though Jehovah was concealing his face from the house of Jacob, meaning Israel, because Jacob was the one who was given the name Israel. He had the 12 sons, and they became the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what it's talking about. He's talking to Israel. Isaiah is a prophet against Israel, and he was sent to Israel to give a witness to the people of Israel. But another thing Jehovah prophesied here in this chapter was this despoiling of Samaria, which we know happened in 719. At least that's the chronology that has been developed, and which certainly I believe it. But I mean, there are many people who have completely different chronologies from the one that I have. The one that I presented online in my articles about chronology. And Jehovah proceeded to speak yet further to me. Anyway, we don't expect that everyone will accept everything that we believe, or that everyone would be able to believe everything the same as we do, because everyone's knowledge is different. But we will possibly talk about Samaria and what year it was destroyed on another occasion. And not today, because we're going to go on. But plan out a scheme and it will be broken up in verse 10. We don't know what Jehovah will do, whether he'll break up our schemes that we plan to do. That's why we need to know Jehovah better, so that we can be we can be found to be righteous, but also that we can be not among these people who are certain to stumble in verse 15, to be ensnared, to be caught, to fall and to be broken. But we want to be able to escape, and we can only do that if we're actually keeping in expectation of Jehovah. The idea, there's another idea that, see, Jehovah can, it's not about human preparation, that you have to take immediate, obviously, if you know there's a danger, and you know you can escape the danger, well, you never know, really. That's the thing. But Jehovah knows. If you believe Jehovah is telling you to do something, then you should do it. But that's not to say you should base your ideas on human understanding. That's not to say you should run away. You could be running away. I mean, not just because you think so. If you're following what Jehovah says and he says run away in what you've learned from Jehovah, yes, that's different. But if Jehovah's not saying to run away and you run away, you could be running into a worse problem. Something you need to be aware of. It can always be worse. We always say it could be worse. That's just saying, how are you doing today? Well, it could be worse. You got to realize you could make it worse for yourself if you do the wrong thing. Very important. Now, this chapter 8, the first 11 verses, as we saw, were not in certain manuscripts. They're not in all the manuscripts. John chapter 8, but Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. At daybreak, however, he again presented himself at the temple, and all the people began coming to him, and he sat down and began to teach them. Now the scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman caught at adultery, and after standing her in their midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of committing adultery. In the law, Moses prescribed for us to stone such sort of women. What really do you say?" Of course, they were saying this to put him to the test in order to have something with which to accuse him. But Jesus bent down and began to write with his finger on the ground, we would say, I think. When they persisted in asking him, he straightened up and said to them, "Let the one of you that is sinless be the first to throw a stone at her." And bending over again, he kept on writing in the ground. But those who heard this began going out, one by one, starting with the older men, and he was left alone, and the woman that was in their midst. Straightening up, Jesus said to her, "Woman, where are they? Did no one condemn you?" She said, "No one, sir." Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go your way. From now on, practice sin no more." Therefore Jesus spoke again to them, saying, "I am the light of the world. He that follows me will by no means walk in darkness, but will possess the light of life." Hence the Pharisees said to him, "You bear witness about yourself. Your witness is not true." In answer, Jesus said to them, "Even if I do bear witness about myself, my witness is true, because I know where I came from and where I'm going. But you do not know where I came from and where I'm going. You judge according to the flesh. I do not judge any man at all. And yet if I do judge, my judgment is truthful, because I am not alone, but the Father who sent me is with me. Also, in your own law it is written, 'The witness of two men is true.' I am one that bears witness about myself, and the Father who sent me bears witness about me." Therefore they went on to say to him, "Where is your Father?" Jesus answered, "You know neither me nor my Father. If you did know me, you would know my Father also." These sayings he spoke in the treasury as he was teaching in the temple. But no one laid hold of him, because his hour had not yet come. Hence he said to them again, "I'm going away, and you will look for me, and yet you will die in your sin. Where I am going, you cannot come." Therefore the Jews began to say, "He will not kill himself, will he? Because he says, 'Where I'm going, you cannot come.'" So he went on to say to them, You are from the realms below. I am from the realms above. You are from this world. I am not from this world. Therefore, I say to you, you will die in your sins. For if you do not believe that I am he, you will die in your sins. Therefore, they began to say to him, who are you? Jesus said to them, why am I even speaking to you at all? I have many things to speak concerning you and to pass judgment upon. As a matter of fact, he that sent me is true, and the very things I heard from him I am speaking in the world. They did not grasp that he was talking to them about the Father. Therefore Jesus said, when once you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am he, and that I do nothing of my own initiative. But just as the Father taught me, I speak these things. And he that sent me is with me. He did not abandon me to myself, because I always do the things pleasing to him. As he was speaking these things, many put faith in him. And so, Jesus went on to say to the Jews that had believed him, if you remain in my word, you are really my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. They replied to him, we are Abraham's offspring, and never have we been slaves to anybody. How is it you say you will become free? Jesus answered them, most truly I say to you, every doer of sin is a slave of sin. Moreover, the slave does not remain in the household forever. The son remains forever. Therefore, if the son sets you free, you will be actually free. I know that you are Abraham's offspring, but you are seeking to kill me because my word makes no progress among you. What things I have seen with my father I speak, and you therefore do the things you have heard from your father. In answer, they said to him, our father is Abraham. Jesus said to them, if you are Abraham's children, do the works of Abraham. But now you are seeking to kill me, a man that has told you the truth that I heard from God. Abraham did not do this. You do the works of your father. They said to him, we were not born from fornication. We have one father, God. Jesus said to them, if God were your father, you would love me. For from God I came forth and am here. Neither have I come of my own initiative at all, but that one sent me forth. Why is it that you do not know what I am speaking? Because you cannot listen to my word. You are from your father the devil, and you wish to do the desires of your father. That one was a manslayer when he began, and he did not stand fast in the truth, because truth is not in him. When he speaks the lie, he speaks according to his own disposition, because he is a liar and the father of the lie. Because I, on the other hand, tell the truth, you do not believe me. Who of you convicts me of sin? If I speak truth, why is it you do not believe me? He that is from God listens to the sayings of God. This is why you do not listen, because you are not from God. In answer, the Jews said to him, do we not rightly say you are a Samaritan and have a demon? Jesus answered, I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. But I am not seeking glory for myself. There is one that is seeking and judging. Most truly I say to you, if anyone observes my word, he will never see death at all. The Jews said to him, now we do know you have a demon. Abraham died, also the prophets, but you say, if anyone observes my word, he will never taste death at all. You are not greater than our father Abraham, who died, are you? Also the prophets died. Who do you claim to be? Jesus answered, if I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father that glorifies me, he who you say is your God. And yet you have not known him, but I know him. And if I said I do not know him, I should be like you, a liar. But I do know him and am observing his word. Abraham, your father, rejoiced greatly in the prospect of seeing my day, and he saw it and rejoiced. Therefore the Jews said to him, you are not yet 50 years old, and still you have seen Abraham? Jesus said to them, Most truly I say to you, before Abraham came into existence, I have been. Therefore they picked up stones to hurl them at him, but Jesus hid and went out of the temple. It was John chapter 8, and that was extremely energetic. That content was extremely intense. Jesus was arguing with these believing Jews. These were the believing Jews. The ones who believed what he said were the ones that were seeking to kill him. That's what this is talking about. That's what this is all about. If someone didn't believe him, you wouldn't even be able to speak to them. They'd just go away. So they wouldn't even be there. They were the ones who believed in Jesus that were saying all these things. They were the ones trying to kill him. So this is how nonsensical it is when we see these organized religions today that think that everyone has to be in complete harmony and that religion is harmony and all that. The believers are the ones that were arguing with Jesus. And it's the complete opposite. The other ones, the unbelievers weren't even there. They were somewhere, they were gone, somewhere else, doing something else. So, I mean, we might think of these people as unbelievers. They sound like they're unbelievers, right? But they believe more than the people who didn't even speak anymore, who stopped talking and just left. These were the believers. It's incredible. It's amazing. It's astounding. And then they picked up stones to hurl them at him. They were trying to kill him by stoning him to death, but picking up sizable, you know, big chunks of rock to hurl them at it, throw stones at him. Like they were trying to kill him. He was right about, you know, he said they were trying to kill him, but they were. When he told them they were wrong, in no uncertain terms, that made them angry enough to attempt to kill him. All he was saying was, he came down from heaven. God was his father. He had actually been sent by God. These were the things that he believed about himself. And they couldn't identify, they didn't believe those same things about themselves. Even though they claimed that God was their father, Jesus pointed out, well, God is not your father because Abraham, you know, would have been very happy to see the Messiah arriving on earth, preaching the truth about Jehovah, the true God, about the loving Father in heaven. Abraham would have rejoiced greatly, but these people were not being happy. They weren't celebrating. They weren't acting happy that Jesus was among them. They didn't rejoice at all. They were just resentful, completely indignant, and then to the point of even trying to kill Jesus. It's a phenomenal chapter, John chapter 8. Phenomenal. The content's amazing. And yet we see Jesus was a very forgiving person with the woman who committed adultery in the first 11 verses of this chapter. Neither do I condemn you. Go your way from now on. Practice sin no more. So this is Ward Green, October 28th, 2022 at 17:18 hours. And I wish you an excellent remainder of your day. You must rejoice in every undertaking of yours, as Deuteronomy 12 and 18 explained, which is a beautiful, fantastic example of one of the commandments from the Old Testament, which under which we're not bound anymore because we were freed from the law by Jesus. The truth will set you free also, right? But Jesus did away with the law by his dying in place of the law. He personified the law, and then he was executed, therefore he died and did away with the law, abolished the law, and the other thing is, he talks about freedom. The Son will give you freedom, because the Son has access to the Master's, you know, affairs. The Son can give you freedom. So they can be free from the law. They can be free from, you know, actually free. You know, they didn't understand this, the idea that how they were slaves. But they were doers of sin, and by his doing away with the law, they could no longer sin under the law. So, and in verse 32, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. I love you. Bye for now.